The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. Century of Lies is a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network. On the web at drugtruth.net, I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. Well, folks, marijuana policy and the drug policy reform movement lost a hero recently. Mickey Martin, an activist, consultant, and friend living down in the Bay Area, California, sadly passed away. Unexpectedly, tragically, he left a family, a wife and children, and he left a huge, huge extended family of activists and friends. Here's an interview I did with Mickey in 2013 when I ran into him at Seattle Hemp Fest.
And make this go live. And then we can just talk. The medical industry would be a good perspective, especially you've actually been part of California's medical industry from the medical marijuana industry from the very early days.
From the early days when there was just a few dispensaries, and it's amazing to see how far the situation's actually come and evolved, and there's still a lot of work to do in California just because of the massive size of the state, but there's been amazing work done, and it started there and has evolved, and it's spilled over into other states, and we're seeing states like Massachusetts and Rhode Island and Maine and other places actually implementing dispensary policies where dispensary is a term that was brought about by our community, just like the term edibles or other things like that. So a lot of things that are now mainstream lingo, even the term medical marijuana, was something that a lot of people 20 years ago didn't, wasn't in their lexicon, and now it's, an everyday, modern, part of everyday life. So it's, it's been heartening to see, to see people come around and to see, some of the research that's getting done now, and to see people who are actually having success with, cancer and, not even just treating it, but actually curing, parts of cancer, skin cancers and stuff like that have been. it's been a very amazing, journey, And then, we developed an edibles company in the early 2000s that, was one of the first people to put forth packaging and labeling that, included prominent warnings and, directions for use and other things like that. And, brought about professionalism to the industry that is now standard and demanded. And
I feel bad because I've forgotten. Normally I have people identify themselves at the beginning of this, so say your name and
sure.
Who are you?
I'm Mickey Martin. I'm the author of Medical Marijuana 101. I used to run a company called Tainted Medicinal Edibles. We were raided in 2007 by the federal government. I currently do consulting, working with people developing businesses in the industry, including dispensaries, grow projects, edibles manufacturers, infused products, stuff like that. So,
and you're outside of, you're not just in Cali, right? You were just doing some work in Massachusetts, their new medical laws being implemented.
I am. I'm currently working on a dispensary project up there, as well as a school project to bring, education and what we've learned here in the West back East, where, people are just getting into this industry, and there's a lot of, misinformation and stuff that people need to, learn to be qualified to provide well for patients and to know what they're talking about. So we're working on that project and hoping to open the Northeastern Institute of Cannabis in hopefully fall, and we're developing the coursework now for basic courses for employment training, for service, for production, for people who want to get into the science aspects of it and lab testing. For people who want to get into the cultivation aspects, for people who want to produce also, different types of medicine. So it's an exciting time to be in cannabis. And Massachusetts, that vote passed by 63%. So it's an interesting place to be developing a business because there's a lot more. It's easier for local politicians and politicians who may be under fire to look at a vote of 63% that Massachusetts had, and in some towns it's 65, 67%, and it's hard for them to try to zone something out or things like that. There have been a lot of people who have tried to put moratoriums in that have got voted down because two-thirds of your town voted for it. And it's been nice to see. It's been more welcoming than, I guess, you know, some of the knee-jerk reactions that you've seen in other areas because the people did speak up there. And I think, you know, if there was initiative processes in all states, you know, I think medical marijuana would probably be, you know, a lot more prominent and, you know, in everywhere because people are, you know, overwhelmingly supportive. You know, I mean, what kind of jerk wouldn't let a sick person, you know, use cannabis and what kind of person wants them to have to get that from the black market? And then, you know, you're at an event like HempFest where, you know, you're seeing the legalization just coming to be here in Washington. You got police officers handing out Doritos. You've got, you know, people who are a lot more open in their use, I guess you would say, a lot more comfortable in who they are as a marijuana user. And it's heartening, you know, to have worked on projects this long and see them, you know, see the fruits of your labor come to be something. I mean, HempFest is grown and grown, but I think, you know, it's symbolic of the bigger picture, which is what our society's doing. And, you know, and there's a conversation happening in our world that I think is very important that people need to, you know, wake up and recognize that nobody wants to see us taking our neighbors into jail for cannabis anymore. I mean, nobody wants to see people getting their car searched and losing their kids and losing their jobs and their standing in the community over simple cannabis use when, you know, any person in the right mind knows that there are much more dangerous substances available legally or through a prescription. And I think the jig is up. You know, I think the drug warriors and the prohibitionists, you know, have lost. And you see them, you know, backpedaling and you know, trying to cut the mustard still and figure out where they, you know, can still fit into the scheme of things when cannabis is legal. Because I think it's not a if, but when. And I think when's coming. And I think when's coming fast because people are there. You know, people like to have, you know, freedom.
This thing just ran out.
Sweet.
Yeah. Before we close, where can people follow your blog?
Sure. I'm at www.weedactivist.com. My business website is tcomconsulting.com. That's T-C-O-M-P, consulting.com. And
on Twitter too.
Facebook, Twitter, all that fun stuff. Trying to figure out Instagram.
Good luck with that one.
Good luck. I got to talk in pictures.
All right, Doug.
Thank you very much.
That again was Mickey Martin. Weedactivist.com. You can also find his work, well, a lot of places. Mickey Martin was a good friend. He was an activist, a reformer, a consultant, and a major figure in the marijuana movement. And he is missed. My deepest condolences to his family and to everyone who knew him. You're listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. Next up, I have an interview with Fergal Eccles. Fergal is with SSDP Ireland and also part of a group called Help Not Harm. We spoke recently about things going on in Ireland and also the Support Don't Punish Global Day of Action for Drug Policy Reform, which is coming up June 26th. June 26th, once again, is the Global Day of Action on Drug Policy Reform, Support Don't Punish. I'm on the line with Fergal Eccles. He works with Help Not Harm and Students for Sensible Drug Policy Ireland. Fergal, how you doing?
Not too bad at all.
So, SSDP Ireland, tell me about the group, tell me about the chapter, and how long have you been working on drug policy there?
So we're in Ireland now. We've got about six chapters, so we pretty much have all our major universities covered, and we consistently score in the top 10 colleges. I think we had three of our chapters in the top 10 SSDP chapters worldwide. So we really pack a punch with very little budget, you know. We've been operating for, I think, about 5 or 6 years now. So I've only really been involved for maybe like the last year and a few months. So I was always a supporter, but I was never motivated to join. And, you know, it all kind of suddenly changed, and it's been a bit of an adventure. You know, I think you kind of meet some interesting people, and it really opens up a lot of opportunities. So kind of just become this passion over the last year.
Yeah, we were talking earlier. Would you mind telling the listeners, how did you get involved?
So I guess I've never really talked about it publicly as much before, but I got arrested on two possession charges about a year and 2 months ago now. And it was like a pretty unheaving situation, you know, and it really stirs things up. I had my parents' house raided, and yeah, that didn't go down so well. But you know, like, I wasn't really caught up in too much like really dodgy activity. You know, like, I've always been a hard worker, you know, and at this point I'd like, you know, I as a software developer, like, made several apps, and you know, I was doing well in college. So I think my parents weren't entirely sure what to make of it. But like, most of my friends say I kind of did the opposite thing to what most people would do. You know, it can really break people down. And I didn't realize how much of a stress it is on your mental health until I got through my court case. Okay, just recently, just within a month ago from now. And the weight that got lifted off my shoulders is incredible. And I'm good with handling those kind of, but it can really destroy people. But like, I went to the Student Sensible Drug Policy for advice. I went to a hemp event, and afterwards got talking to one of the one of the leaders who'd helped found it several years ago, and he's a postgraduate now. A website to map drug litter. He's actually released it recently. It's called Open Litter Map. And like, the idea is that you can use citizen science to map drug litter globally. So I was helping him on this project. I got kind of caught up in the Student Sensible Drug Policy office, and the people there were just incredibly bright, inspiring individuals. And I got caught up. I did festival welfare. Then back in college, we pushed the medical cannabis bill, and I got really hands-on with that. So you learn a lot very quickly with the community, and you know, it's you learn a lot about yourself as well. So like, I'm really glad it happened. It empowered me through being arrested, and like the shock of that, and it, you know, I think it allowed me to kind of escape the hole people can find themselves trapped in, you know, where they, you know, they suddenly have their, you know, their friends and everything ripped away from them, and you know, they can't have any opportunity. Like, I was given a lot of opportunity, you know, which helps in the long run with, you know, with the case and with, you know, yeah, and my own, you know, my own mental health and my own, you know, kind of success in that regard. So yeah, really happy I got involved.
Well, and it's good that you got motivated like that after that experience. It's congratulations on coming through the other end of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think as well, like, a lot of it, people come to us, like, other people come in the same situation that I was in, and it's like nice to be able to, you know, it's quite a scary situation. And I think that's what, like, one of the things that we try to focus on in SSDP is providing that safe space for people, you know. It's harm reduction in the sense of like stopping harm reduction of law enforcement, you know. But a lot of people get stuck in dodgy situations when they leave home for the first time and they're in college, you know. In Ireland, we have a lot of that culture anyway. A lot of people move from the countryside and they don't really know how to handle themselves.
I'm from a small town in Iowa. I'll just leave that there. So now it's harm reduction. This is I want to talk about some of the stuff that SSDP Ireland, and it's not like it's a chapter at ooh, this is Ireland College. This is it's SSDP Ireland, and then you have six campus chapters, which is brilliant. You folks have done the SSDP Ireland has done some great work along with members of your Oireachtas, of your national legislature, and we were talking before, there's a couple of things. The medical marijuana, I don't know as much as I pretended to. So tell me about the medical marijuana bill that y'all got through.
So it was co-written by Help Not Harm, which is an NGO here in Ireland, and also the People Before Profit political party. Easter last year, it was kind of written and introduced. And then we had a kind of a very iconic, she became very famous woman in Vera Toomey, who was being denied the right to medical cannabis. So her daughter had Dravet syndrome, a treatment resistant form of epilepsy. And her campaign, it just became huge. Everyone was talking about it, every day. And the media was really on board. It was kind of a stop-start thing, and it culminated with Vera Toomey deciding that she would walk from Dublin, our capital city, to the Dáil Éireann, which is our government parliament. And that walk, it really won it over, and they decided to fast track the medical cannabis bill. So on December 11th last year, it was announced that it would be voted on in its first session on December 11th. So it went from us having, 6 months to prepare to, like 7 days or something, I think, crazy. And like the community rallied, and it really inspired a lot of, like a huge variety of people in Ireland. The bill passed, but then it started getting delayed and delayed more. And, our medical minister, Simon Harris, requested a report from a health authority that didn't seem to research examples, like set examples of medical cannabis programs. Since then, like one patient has been permitted medical cannabis and received it. Vera Toomey still hasn't received any medical cannabis. She's actually just left to go to Holland for treatment. So the bill doesn't seem to have gone anywhere. It had a very good energy, and it's almost been hijacked and kind of torn apart now. So there's mixed views about it. Like it seems to be going, pharmaceutical, then a pharmaceutical avenue, and quite restrictive avenue. So I'm not entirely hopeful about it for the near future, but we might see something in the next 2 years.
Well, and these are the kinds of we were talking before, but it's the limits of reform. They offer you this much and see if you're happy, and if you're not, then well, okay, we'll give you this, we'll make this concession. And when they make a concession and it's so insulting that it, they may as well have just stayed silent. It's just, yeah. In fact, I just opened up the irishexaminer.com and we're recording this on Tuesday, June 20th. The Vera Toomey and her 7-year-old daughter, Ava. And the reason they've arrived in Ireland is because in Holland is because the government, the HSE, the neurologists have demanded that we would go to another country to provide evidence that this treatment would work for our daughter. That is outrageous.
And I think something key to take point here as well. Ireland is like very, famously it's a tax haven. Like the big tech companies here, they pay very little in tax, but at the same time, we've also got a huge amount of pharmaceutical industry here. I think it's largely due to, like, we're a European country that speaks English. And, without Brexit there, UK have the pounds. So, like, Ireland have this kind of unique advantage, being English-speaking and a Euro country. So, we're kind of, in the grasp of a lot of American pharmaceutical companies. And I think it feels unlikely to get something like medical cannabis through here. There will always be a lot of pushback, when it comes to lobbying in our government because of this.
And you just have to keep pushing back even harder. That's you did have one pass in, was it February? Which is a supervised injection site. You've had Ireland has had needle exchange for some time. Right, but this is have you talk to me about harm reduction in Ireland?
How's it going? I think there's a good buzz going like around the country's services. I mean, like the services, like we've got amazing health services, public health services like Anna Liffey and Citywide, doing great harm reduction work, operating heroin clinics and doing homeless services. And I think it kind of like harm reduction was a kind of a taboo here as well, like the concept of it until the last few years. But it's really culminated with Club Health conference that happened here in Dublin, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago. Because, you know, right now, like at the conference, everyone is talking about decriminalization. Everyone is talking about harm reduction, and it felt trendy and like about it, you weren't really involved, you know. And I think that's been quite interesting. Like the push for the injection centers has been, as being our, you know, NGOs, health NGOs and health organizations, doctors associations, they've been passing motions and really pushing legislatively, which I think is really cool to see. So like the bill, like the supervised injection center bill, it passed, you know, it really just went through. There was a small bit of public, you know, opposition. You know, people were afraid that, you know, it would bring an attraction of people who use drugs to the city center, you know, and particularly the homeless society. But I don't know if you've ever been to Dublin, but use of drugs is not hidden here. You know, it's very public. So I think people know that it's time for some sort of change. We have one of the worst homeless crises in Europe at the moment. You know, so the we really are in a strange place with these this very underfunded services here. So hopefully proactive measures again will start making changes. And they've kind of come out of a lack of funding. You know, it is what's really pushed it. Like they don't have the funding to make a real dent anymore. So they have to find, you know, some other solution. Necessity is kind of the mother of invention in this case, I think. I think the penny has dropped in Ireland with kind of, you know, the organizations that kind of couldn't speak up because they'd lose their funding. Like that, we, you know, the penny's dropped now and they can speak their mind, you know, in the same way like Canada and Toronto, you know, it really took pushings on, you know, by single characters, you know, and then you see some good results and it skyrockets. Yeah. But that's what I'm hoping. The next phase for Ireland is that you get some good results out of our new supervised injection centers. You know, you show change, and like hopefully with the litter mapping project produced by a member of SSDP, you know, the open litter map, hopefully we'll be able to actually show a decline in discarded needles in public once the injection center is open. That will be the real, you know, killer when it comes to passing public opinion and like passing the tests of the public. And when you see a reduction in, you know, the visual aspect of the more harmful drug use, I think it'll do a real good thing for public opinion in Ireland.
Thank you, because you reminded me of the thing I wanted to ask you about. You mentioned at the very beginning, and you just mentioned it again, but a litter mapping project, which I started to guess what you meant, and but you're talking about drug litter. You're talking like discarded syringes and such. So tell me about this project. What is this?
I'll get you the address now. Let me just look it up to make sure that I get it absolutely right. But it's called Open Litter Map. It was founded by a man named Sean Lynch, based here in Ireland, and openlittermap.com. And what he's trying to do, he's an environmentalist. He's looking at all kinds of litter, but he also focuses on drug litter as well. So you take a photo with your phone, with your location services turned on. You upload those photos to his site, and he'll mark it on a map. So it has very, very fine resolution. I think the Irish government were recording cases of discarded needles on paper. You know, and you know, there was something like €4 million paid out in damages to, you know, city council workers who had been injured by needles, like just discarded needles on the ground. So this app allows you to report it to, you know, at least get your data across when there doesn't seem to be a sort of a relative authority to kind of deal with the problem, you know. When used needles start turning up in people's back gardens, I mean, when we were searching for them to get the first data for the map, we found needles in school grounds, you know, like on school grounds, around bus stops, bus stations. We had reports of children picking up needles in bus stations, you know. So, like, I think it's a really cool project. It works globally, so anyone can use it, no matter what city you're in. I really suggest checking it out if you want to get a point across. You know, it has categories so that you can, you know, describe, you know, this from the syringes to other sorts of paraphernalia, you know, smoking litter and all kinds of litter. So it's a super cool project. I believe it's like an open source project. He pulled an amazing project together. So I really recommend checking it out and getting a kind of, we can get a global map going. And I think it really gets a visual aspect to a drug policy. So far, he's reached Australia, Brazil, Canada, Denmark, Germany, Spain, India, Ireland, so Italy. So I think it could be a very powerful tool if you want to get on board.
So getting up close to the end of the show, again, we're speaking with Fergal Eccles from SSDP Ireland and Help Not Harm. Tell me how to, SSDP.org/Ireland is one way to find SSDP Ireland, but do you have Facebook and some other stuff? How do people find the work you do?
Yeah, so you can find it on SSDP Ireland. It's the full name, sorry, is Students for Sensible Drug Policy Ireland, and you can find that on Facebook. Our handle on Twitter is SSDP Ireland, and you can find Help Not Harm on Twitter and Facebook. There's a Help Not Harm website, helpnotharm.org, and there's a Students for Sensible Drug Policy website on the way for Ireland. It's not here quite yet, but we're kind of growing now, so things are moving. If you if anyone listening is based in Ireland or in Dublin, we're going to have like a Support Don't Punish event next Monday on the 26th, and you can find out about that on our Facebook pages.
Cool. That's right. June 26th is the annual Day of Action. Yeah, tell me about what do you folks have planned? Tell me what you have planned.
Yeah, so like we were a little bit like kind of unorganized this year because it came so quickly. But we've got kind of like a flyering Day of Action. We're hoping to get out in more than one city. And then later on that day, we're hoping to have Senator Lynn Moran. I think she just confirmed with us speak at a location in Dublin City Centre. It's the pub called Bagot's Hutton. Fantastic venue, and we're hoping to have a kind of a display by a number of drug services from Dublin and Ireland, which is citywide. I think Anna Liffey, we're going to send someone, but it was clashing. But we've got a nice lineup to kind of inform the public on what drug policy means for the organisations that are like really on the front lines. And it'll be great to have Senator Lynn Moran. We've reached out to Fiona Reardon, but we're waiting to hear back from them. As of now, but I'm hoping it's going to be a good event and kind of bring some attention to the bills, you know, because there hasn't been enough focus and kind of media buzz around them. So I think hopefully kind of stir some of that would be good.
That was an interview with Fergal Eccles. He's with SSDP Ireland and Help Not Harm, lives in Ireland. And it was a pleasure talking to Fergal. We, of course, also were talking about the Support Don't Punish Day of Action, which is June 26th. Hopefully, folks, try and get to one of those events. If you can't, then be sure to be on social media. Hashtag Support Don't Punish. And, well, that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. The executive producer of the Drug Truth Network is Dean Becker. Drug Truth Network programs are available by podcast. URLs to subscribe are on the drugtruth.net website. Drug Truth Network is on Facebook. Please give its page a like. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh, and of course, also at Drug Policy Facts. We'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of news and information about the drug war and this century of lies. For now, for the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.